Welcome to the Deep Dive, your shortcut to the cutting edge of scientific discovery.
Great to be here.
Today, we're really digging into a fascinating new report, one that kind of challenges some core ideas in antibody engineering.
Yeah, it definitely does. Our mission today is to explore these, often overlooked framework regions of antibodies.
Right, and see how manipulating them, sometimes in really subtle ways, can profoundly alter their therapeutic function.
Exactly. We're focusing on a paper in MABS. It's titled Tuning Antibody Stability and Function by Rational Designs of Framework Mutations. The lead author is Joseph C.F. Enea, and for those looking it up, the DOI is 10.1080142020862.2025.253211 city.
Okay, MABS, good journal. And this paper lays out a pretty neat computational and experimental workflow, right? It seems like it opens up some genuinely new possibilities for optimizing antibody drugs.
It really does. For years, as you know, antibody engineering has been, well, almost laser focus on the CDRs, the complementarity determining regions.
Those flexible loops, the bits that actually grab the antigen, the hands, essentially.
Precisely. But this paper asks, what about the rest of it? The structural scaffolding, the framework regions, or FWs? Could they hold sort of hidden keys?
Keys to maybe enhancing stability or, and this is the really intriguing part for me, maybe even decoupling antigen binding from the downstream biological effects.
That's the core question they tackle. It could really shift how we think about designing these molecules.
Okay, so before we dive into their findings, maybe a quick refresher, just to frame it. Antibodies, immunoglobulins, critical for adaptive immunity. They recognize specific targets, antigens.
And structurally, you've got those CDRs we mentioned, highly variable. They give the antibody its specificity. They form the paratope.
And then supporting them is the immunoglobulin framework, the FW. It's more rigid, more conserved structurally, like the skeleton holding the hands in place.
A good analogy. And when engineers, especially using AI and machine learning, try to improve antibodies, they almost always tinker with the CDRs.
Because the thinking is, well, that's where the binding happens. Improve the binding, improve the antibody. Seems logical.
It does. But this paper starts with a finding that really made me pause. They looked at different computational methods for suggesting mutations, specifically in these framework regions.
Okay.
And they found that the popular antibody-specific language models, things like anti-Birdie, Ablang2, anti-Birda2, they actually showed pretty limited insight. They weren't great at suggesting useful FW mutations.
Wait, really? The models designed specifically for antibodies struggled with a part of the antibody? That seems backward. Why?
Well, it seems they were almost too good at recognizing the normal FW sequences. They were highly confident about the wild-type amino acids there. Almost, you could say, over-specialized.
So they just kept predicting the status quo for the FWs, not suggesting useful changes.
Kind of, yeah. Because FWs are highly conserved, unlike the super diverse CDRs, the models trained on these vast, diverse antibody repertoires maybe didn't learn the right patterns to find beneficial novel mutations in the conserved parts.
Oh, I see. Their strength in handling CDR diversity became a weakness for the conserved FWs more. So what did work for framework mutagenesis then?
Interestingly, more generic protein language models like ESM2 or more traditional structure-based methods like using Rosetta software were actually more effective.
Okay, so that's a lesson in itself. Don't assume the specialized tool is always best for every part of the problem, even within its specialty. Different approaches for different regions.
Exactly. So knowing this, the authors then leaned into a structure-based approach, rational design. They use trastuzumab as their model system.
Which makes sense. Trastuzumab, or Herceptin, targets HER2, used widely in certain breast cancers, a very relevant test case.
And they use Rosetta software to computationally predict how mutations would affect folding stability, the NG folding. They were looking for mutations that would make the antibody more stable, ideally without messing up its function.
So stabilize the scaffold. Did they find anything promising?
They did. One real success story was a double mutant in the heavy chain variable region, the VH, specifically VH-S85N plus R87T.
S85N, R87T, okay. And where is that located relative to the binding site?
That's the key. It's distal. It's far away from the CDRs, from the antigen binding site itself.
So changing the skeleton far from the hands, and what happened when they made this antibody in the lab?
They confirmed it experimentally. VH-S85N plus R87T was significantly more stable. It had a higher melting temperature, TM, than the original trastuzumab.
More stable? Great. But did it still work? Did it bind HER2? Did it trigger the immune response?
Yes. Crucially, it preserved full functionality. It bound HER2 just fine, and it still induced ADCC antibody-dependent cellular cytotoxicity. That's a really important way these antibodies kill cancer cells. So more stable, still fully active.
That's a fantastic result. Stabilizing without a functional cost just by tweaking the framework. Did they have controls, maybe mutations that didn't work, to help understand why this one did?
They did. They also tested another double mutant, R50S plus R59N. This one was located closer to the CDRs.
Okay, closer to the action. What happened there?
That one wasn't successful. It resulted in reduced HER2 binding, and it lost its ability to trigger ADCC and inhibit cancer cell proliferation. So a functional hit.
Interesting. So the distal one worked, the more proximal one didn't. How did they figure out why? What was happening at the molecular level?
That's where they brought in molecular dynamics simulations, MD simulations.
Right. These are computational methods that basically simulate how atoms and molecules move over time. They give you a dynamic picture, not just a static one.
Exactly. And the MD simulations gave them insights. For the successful VHS85N plus R87T mutant, the simulation showed it maintained the optimal packing geometries within the antibody structure. Everything fit together nicely, dynamically.
Okay, so the structure remained well-behaved. And for the unsuccessful R50S plus R59N?
The simulations show that this mutant actually perturbed the packing between the VH and VL domains, the heavy and light chain variable regions. It messed up how they fit and move together.
Ah, so even though it wasn't directly in the binding site, being closer to the CDRs and disrupting that VHVL interface was enough to compromise the interaction with HER2.
Precisely. It really highlights the importance of what they call interdomain dynamics, how these different parts of the antibody communicate and influence each other through their movements and interactions. It's not just about the static structure.
It really is like a finely tuned machine, or that ballet analogy. A subtle change can ripple through. Okay, so they used computation to explain experimental results. Did they try flipping that, using computation to predict where to mutate first?
They did. And this led to probably the most startling finding in the whole paper. They inverted the pipeline. They used their own computational framework called AlloHuppy first.
AlloHuppy, what does that do?
It analyzes local backbone motions in the protein structure to find sort of communication hubs residues that seem important for transmitting signals or movements through the structure.
Okay, finding key communication points in the framework.
And using AlloHuppy, they identified a key hub in the light chain variable domain, the VL, at position Q89. Glutamine 89.
Position 89 in the light chain framework, identified computationally as important. So what mutation did they design there?
Based on this prediction, they designed the VLQ89A mutant, swapping the glutamine for an alanine at position 89.
Simple alanine mutation at a computationally flagged spot. What happened when they tested VLQ89A? Was it more stable? Did it bind better?
Here's the twist.
Yeah.
The VLQ89A mutant, it still bound HER2. And it bound just as well, essentially at the same level as the original wild-type trastuzumab.
Okay. Binding affinity preserved. So far, so good. Seems like another potential success.
You'd think so. But, and this is the kicker, despite binding HER2 perfectly well, this VLQ89A mutant completely lost its Fab-mediated effects. It couldn't inhibit cancer cell proliferation anymore.
Wow. So the part of the antibody that binds the target, the Fab, wasn't triggering its intended effect, even though it was bound.
Correct. And it got even more striking. It also lost its Fc-mediated effector functions, like ADCC. The immune system engagement was gone, too.
So it binds, but it does nothing. It's completely inert functionally.
Essentially, yes. This is a really critical finding. It decouples antigen binding from the downstream functions. The key fits the lock perfectly. You can turn it, but the door doesn't open. The biological action is just gone.
That fundamentally challenges a long-held assumption in antibody engineering, doesn't it? That high affinity binding is the main goal, and function will follow.
Absolutely. For anyone in drug discovery, especially doing high throughput screening based primarily on binding, this is a wake-up call. You could be selecting binders that are functionally useless or missing subtle changes that preserve binding but kill function.
How did they explain this decoupling? What did the molecular analysis show for Q89A?
The MD analysis again provided clues. While the direct contacts for binding HER2 were maintained in Q89A, this single mutation caused widespread disturbances throughout the antibody's internal contact network.
Not just locally?
No. These perturbations extended from the CDR loops, across the VHVL interface, and even propagated down into the constant domains, the FEC region.
Wow. A single alanine mutation in the VL framework sends ripples through the entire antibody structure, shutting down function everywhere, even at the distant FC region, while leaving the binding site intact.
That's what the data suggests. It points to a subtle but incredibly powerful allosteric effect. A change in one distal location influences global behavior and function.
So stepping back, what are the really big picture implications here? This really pushes for a more holistic view of antibody engineering.
Definitely. You can't just focus on the CDRs in isolation. Mm-hmm. You have to consider the entire molecule framework included and how these different regions communicate and influence each other through dynamics and conformational changes.
And it opens up the framework as a new playground for design beyond just stability.
Exactly. FW mutagenesis could potentially fine-tune not just stability, but maybe antigen affinity itself, solubility, aggregation resistance, even immunogenicity. These are all critical aspects of developability.
Developability meaning how easy it is to actually make it into a working drug. Production, formulation, stability and storage, how it behaves in the body.
Precisely. Things that make an antibody a viable therapeutic, not just a lab curiosity. This work expands the toolkit significantly.
And that Q89A mutant, it's such a stark reminder. High binding affinity does not automatically equal therapeutic efficacy. We might need more sophisticated functional assays much earlier in the development process.
It strongly suggests that yes, relying solely on binding data early on could be misleading. We need to rethink how we assess function and efficacy right from the start.
Looking forward then, where does this research point? What are the next steps?
Well, several exciting possibilities. One is developing strategies to train those antibody language models specifically for FW mutagenesis to overcome the blind spot they identified.
Teaching the AI to understand the framework's nuances better.
Right. There's also the potential for using inverse folding models, designing proteins from scratch based on a desired structure and properties, rather than just tweaking existing ones.
And could this approach be applied elsewhere on the antibody? Maybe the FC region itself?
Absolutely. You could imagine applying this integrated computational experimental pipeline to engineer the FEO region directly, to fine-tune specific interactions with immune cells, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Enhancing ADCC or maybe silencing it if needed.
It really deepens our appreciation for those interdomain dynamics and these distal or allosteric effects throughout the entire molecule. Every part seems connected.
It paints a picture of the antibody as a dynamic integrated system,
yeah,
not just modular parts clipped together.
Okay, fascinating stuff. As we wrap up this deep dive, let's crystallize the key takeaways. If you had to pick three main results from this paper that our listeners should really focus on, what would they be?
All right, three key takeaways. First, AI's blind spot for frameworks, those antibody-specific language models we rely on. They're surprisingly limited for suggesting good FW mutations. Structure-based methods or even generic protein models seem better for that specific task right now.
Okay, takeaway one. Choose your computational tools wisely, especially for FWs. What's number two?
Second, distal stability and function can coexist. Rational design of framework mutations, even ones far from the binding site, like that VHS85N plus R87T, can significantly boost stability without sacrificing antigen binding or crucial functions like ADCC. So you can improve the scaffold without breaking the machine.
Good news for engineering more robust antibodies. And the third takeaway has to be about that Q89A mutant, right?
Absolutely. Third, and maybe the most paradigm challenging, binding can be decoupled from function. A single framework mutation, like VLQ89A, can leave antigen binding perfectly intact but completely abolish both Fab and FC-mediated functions. This directly refutes the simple idea that tighter binding always means better therapy.
A crucial insight. So AI limitations for FWs, distal mutations can stabilize without harm, and binding doesn't always equal function. Got it.
Which leads to a final thought to ponder. If just one subtle change in the antibody's structural bones can fundamentally alter its destiny, turning it from a therapeutic weapon into just a passive binder, what other hidden layers of regulation and function are waiting to be discovered? Not just in engineered antibodies, but in the complex architectures of our own immune molecules.
And for everyone listening, how might these insights influence the next generation of therapeutics you design? Lots to think about.
Indeed.
That's it for this deep dive on Tuning Antibody Stability and Function by Rational Designs of Framework Mutations. We hope this gave you a valuable head start on this evolving area. Join us next time for another deep dive.